Welcome to the Tuesday, April 9th, 2019, regular closed session meeting of the East Bay Mud Board of Directors. Can we have roll call, Madam Secretary?
Director Coleman?
Present.
Director Katz?
No.
Director Lenny?
Here.
Director Mellon?
Present.
Director Patterson?
Present.
Director Young?
Here.
Director McIntosh?
Here.
President Young?
I'm still here.
You're still here. All right.
In either form. Are there anybody, is there anyone here that would like to make public comment? Seeing none, we will now convene to conference room 8 to discuss our closed session agenda items 1A through C and 2A.
Mark Foley, don't go away.
2B, and we'll be back for our regular meeting at 1:15. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Tuesday, April 9th, 2019 regular session of the East Bay Mud Board of Directors. The Planning and Legislative Human Resources Committees both met earlier today and will report under item 11. Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Directors Coleman?
Present.
Katz?
Present.
Lenny?
Here.
McIntosh?
Here.
Mellon?
Present.
Patterson?
Present.
President Young?
I am here. Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We have two presentations this morning or this afternoon. Mr. General Manager.
Thank you, President Young. So we have two awards. The first is an award for the work that was done on the Sobrante and Upper San Leandro water treatment plants, the ozonation system improvements. And while I have some words to read, our presenter will be Director McIntosh, who the board may remember that her constituents came to the board meeting to express concerns about the taste of the water in her service area during the drought. So she has a special appreciation for the completion of this effort. The Sobrante and Upper San Leandro Water Treatment Plant Ozone System Improvements Project received an award for the Outstanding Water and Wastewater Project of the Year from the San Francisco section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. This $40 million construction project includes a new state-of-the-art ozone system, seismic improvements, chemical safety improvements, power system safety upgrades, and distribution control system upgrades for greater reliability and improved treatment capabilities. This project gives the district tools to effectively and efficiently deal with taste and odor events in the raw water reservoirs, along with allowing the plants to operate at their full design capacity. This project will help the district manage through future droughts by allowing the improved water treatment plants to use more supplemental supply without concern for taste and odor issues that could follow during drought conditions. The project has delivered significant energy efficiency savings for the district. The new ozone system will reduce annual operation costs by more than $250,000 per year and will reduce annual maintenance costs by up to $460,000 per year. The new ozone system helps the district meet its sustainability goals by reducing carbon footprint by about 600 tons of carbon dioxide emissions per year and improve reliability of these critical plants for years to come. The award acknowledges the district's team's ability to overcome obstacles that included working at two different sites concurrently, working long hours, handling differing site conditions, working at a critical operating facility, and meeting a tight schedule to have the ozone system in service before the start of the taste and odor system, odor season at the reservoirs. Many district employees in multiple departments helped this project come to fruition, and some of them are here today to represent the entire team, including, and I ask that you come forward and we'll work to take a picture, Samuel Abram, Joe Casera, Ted Lamb, Brett Margoshian, Besnik Miftari, Brian Miller, Ali Shekholslami, Chris Schumat, Serge Terentiev, Lisa Toth, and Jimmy Yoloye. On behalf of the district, we'll be presenting, Director McIntosh will present this award, and we congratulate you on your efforts.
Obviously, this is a project close to my heart, and I remember raging to Alex. I was up for re-election, and I had all of these constituents complaining about the taste and odor of our water, and Alex assured me that once we got to this project, everything would be okay, and it was. Congratulations to you all. Well done, wonderful project.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, and I guess all good things often come in multiples, and so we have another award here today from the American Society of Civil Engineers, and this is for a project, the San Pablo Tunnel East Shaft Improvement Project, and this is in President Young's ward and to a degree in her backyard since she's a resident of or grew up in Kensington. The San Pablo Tunnel East Shaft Improvement Project received an award for the Small Project of the Year from the San Francisco section of the American Society of Civil Engineers. It involved the installation of a 42-inch valve in the tunnel and short segment of the tunnel liner. The tunnel is located 150 feet below ground surface. The project team applied innovative approaches to safely and efficiently meet the project goal of increasing safety and reliability after a major earthquake. The project was completed 3 months ahead of schedule and within the overall budget despite challenges associated with existing conditions. Many employees in multiple departments helped this project come to fruition. Some of them are here today to represent the entire team. We have Tim Carlstrand, Marshall McLeod, Joseph Patton, and Carl Tingwald. And on behalf of the district, Director Young will present the award. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your continued efforts on behalf of the district to make our water customers and our water system safe and reliable. Go.
Okay, we have no announcements from closed session. I do have several cards for public comment, and I'm assuming this one on Comanche would also be under public comment and not.
That's public comment. There's one for item four, but the other two are public comment.
Right. Okay. Michaela Witten-Ryder, are you here?
Yes.
Oh, you're behind. I can't see you through the screen. you have 3 minutes, and there's a timer.
Somewhere. I gave you guys all a packet. I don't know if you had a chance to read it over.
I don't know that all of us got to look through all of it.
So the reason I'm here today, and I know you guys deal with huge issues and hundreds of thousands of customers and thousands of employees and big infrastructure and dams, my problem is very small, and it has to do with me and now 10 residents on North Shore Comanche's shoreline. Basically, June of last year, a no-boat buoy was put into my cove. I know this sounds small, like I said, but it directly affects only 8 residents. All of the other residents are able to park their boats right next to their houses and not have to pay a $16 mooring fee every single day, except for these 8 homes. I'm shaking. When the no boat buoy was put into our cove, I made a phone call to my park manager, where East Bay Mud works directly with CRC. And she told me this buoy had never been there before. And I've lived there for 10 years. I've never seen this buoy. The boat inn was used as an amenity to sell me my home based on the lifestyle that me, my husband, and my child wanted. And my husband commutes an hour each way just so we can live where we live to do what we want to do. They said that the buoy was never there. And then I speak with Kent Lambert, and he tells me, no, the buoy's been there for 20 years. Well, I've been there for 10. I've never seen this buoy. And they just threw it in our cove. They never wrote us a letter. They didn't talk to us about it. It wasn't very respectful. I've tried to communicate with CRC. I went to Kent Lambert. I've sent letters to Mr. Cote trying to get this resolved until I drove 2.5 hours to come and talk to you guys in regards to this. One of my biggest issues is that there's such a fire danger where I live because there's unregulated campers that camp and camp and camp, and they don't care what they're doing, but my home is less than 100 yards from an open campfire. And there's only one exit in and out of Lake Comanche, and there's over 200 homes and sometimes 400 campers. There's no way we're all getting out. And the boat was very important for us to just go out onto the water and head to South Shore, and we would be safe. And I don't actually understand how East Bay Mud expects to implement or regulate this no-boat buoy. So campers can come in and out of this no-boat zone, and other people can. And what are they looking up, CF numbers? Are they taking pictures of them? No. The only reason I'm getting in trouble is because they know my boat. They know who I am. And even if they saw a camper in the no-boat zone, what are they going to get, a $100 fine? Don't do that. I get letters of eviction where they're trying to force me out of my home. And I constantly get letters where they're trying to force me out of my home for following rules. I didn't even know we had to follow East Bay Mud rules and regulations.
Okay. I can see this is an extremely important issue to you. It's clear that it's an important issue. I did not have time to review all of this, but I'm going to ask Mike Togolini, who's raising his hand behind you, to go back and chat and perhaps...
I don't mind coming back down in 2 weeks if you guys would like to. I would rather you take the time.
Yeah, well, let's... we should, try to work through this and understand it fully and information.
I have received your letter and am aware of the issue. Have not heard back from staff on the second letter that you sent. But Mike Tognolini is even closer as our Director of Water and Natural Resources. He is the one to whom Kent reports, so he can check with you after the meeting.
Okay.
And for the board, what we'll do is provide a summary of the situation and try to help you understand what we view as occurring.
And of course, you're welcome to come back in 2 weeks. I hope that the matter is resolved to everyone's satisfaction.
May I say one last thing? The buoy doesn't help East Bay Mud at all. It's to create a camper's cove that actually causes more problems. So I don't know if that means anything, but it doesn't do anything for East Bay Mud.
That sounds like a good conversation for you to have with Mike.
Right.
Alex, in that memo that we're going to receive, I'd like to address a couple things to verify when the buoy went in, if it went in recently, talking to the neighbors, why there's a buoy there. Have we looked at the escape issue raised on the fire hazard, which is huge in the foothills? And from that perspective, just some of the points that were raised, if they can be addressed back to...
I can provide letters from the neighbors. I can provide the CAL FIRE report as well as my insurance report, if that would help.
And also, are there exemptions to the no park rule? I guess.
Yeah, this is really a balance between... And we'll expand, but we're trying to strike a balance between safety for swimmers and accessibility for boats. So we'll get into it and be responsive to the issues raised by Ms. Ryder.
There's been no issue for 10 years. No incidents, no, problems. Okay.
Thank you for coming down.
Sure. I'm sorry. I just wanted to understand it because I'm still trying to get this. There's no boats allowed in there, and she lives in the cove and wants to get the boat.
Ms. Ryder is a resident of the mobile home park adjacent to the shoreline of Comanche Reservoir,
uh-huh.
And so there's a difference of perspective on whether the boats of the private homeowners slash mobile home residents can be parked in this area. And it'll be better articulated with facts from staff, but as I understand it, during the drought, the reservoir level got very low for a few years there, and so the buoys were removed because they didn't have anything to float in. And then they were not replaced until recently, and that is raising the issue that Ms. Ryder is concerned about, because that's been quite a few years between the start of the first drought and that rolled into a second one. And then
my question still is just, it's a matter of where she's able to keep her boat.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Can you dock it?
Some visual, as some illustrations would be helpful in what's provided.
Good suggestion.
And okay. Alex, this is not for the memo, but this raises a topic I discussed with you several years ago. The folks in Comanche who are on our land have no representation. And I would like that, again, looked at, because they don't have a representative for their issues. It's not the county of Calaveras or Amador. And so even though they're paying us to live there and paying for the water and sewer to us, they don't have representation. So that's probably more of a representation, right? More of a closed memo, perhaps?
Sure, we can follow up again with that information. It's been a number of years.
Yeah. Bob Van Bibber was always the one who would call me on Comanche issues. He's been their leader.
Okay. All right. Yvette Rivera. You have 3 minutes.
Oh. Thank you, Board. I dropped off a copy of the April 2nd, 2019 brief that my lawyers prepared for the United States Court of Appeals, Ninth Circuit District Court. As you know, the case is Yvette Rivera versus East Bay Mud et al., which includes Ask Me 444. The reason I'm here and I'm dropping it off is because I've spent many years here at the district and I've worked with General Counsel's office on some cases that I was involved in, and I never got to see a lot of the paperwork. I never got to see any of the complaints or any of the filings. Usually I just signed a declaration. So I wanted to make sure that this board had what is considered a public document. And since I have on my clock 2 minutes left, I'm just going to read a paragraph from it. One of the reasons I've dropped it off is so that people at the district, if anybody wants a copy of it, since now it's a public record, I've handed it into the board of directors, they can actually request it from East Bay Mud instead of having to go through the Ninth Circuit District Court. I think my attorneys did a wonderful job, and I'm just going to read a paragraph that actually makes me feel like I'm being heard in some venue, even though we're still in the process of addressing this issue. On page 32, it says, plaintiff, and of course I'm the plaintiff, proffered evidence that after she complained, East Bay Mud began to retaliate against her by engaging in a pattern of conduct, including reducing her duties and engaging in disciplinary measures such as write-ups and denials of routine scheduling requests. As to her reduction of duties, Yvette Rivera testified that after she complained, her supervisor instructed her to remove her name, her home phone number as an emergency after hours contact, and instructed her not to answer any work calls after hours on her cell phone. Even though she routinely handled such matters before she had complained about discrimination. Plaintiff also presented a memo authored by Dolores Turner, dated within a month after she complained to the board, explicitly recognizing that I had requested a classification study, and in the event that the study concludes Ms. Rivera is performing the duties of supervisor, then East Bay Mud defendant would ensure that she no longer performs them. This brief covers quite a bit of information I've already provided to the district. In fact, after this meeting, well, actually, after work today, I'll be requesting a Public Records Act to see the report written by a gentleman or an investigator called Eric Glassman on behalf of the district. He ended up working for the district as a trainer, so I know I have to put that in through Risha Cole. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We have the consent calendar and six items for consideration.
One through three, five, and six. Number four, we have a speaker on, I believe. So
yes,
that
we
be
do have a speaker for number four.
I'll second John's motion.
Any discussion or other items that members wish to remove from the agenda? I mean, from the consent calendar? Okay, we have a motion and a second for items one, two, three, five, and six. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. That is adopted. Item four, we have Cisco Ortega to speak. Do you want to hear the item before speaking, or would you rather speak prior to the item being presented? Okay.
We actually don't have a presentation, given this is a consent item, but I can just briefly summarize.
Great.
That we're this item is for board consideration to approve a contract for the purchase in a not-to-exceed amount just shy of $1 million per year for supplying resilient seated gate and butterfly valves for 2 years, beginning on April 9th, with three options to renew for one-year periods for a total amount just under $5 million. I can also share that you know, these estimates are based on prior use, and that and that's about what I have. I have a little bit of information from the last time, but I'm not sure that that's germane to the public comment.
Okay, Mr. Ortega, you have three
minutes. Good afternoon, everyone. Just I'll make this quick. Just wanted to, on behalf of Ferguson Water Works, my name is Cisco Ortega. I just wanted to thank the individuals, thank East Bay Mud for the opportunity to work with you guys, and we're looking forward to it. A couple of people I want to mention that work with us greatly and appreciate their efforts is Kelly Smith, Becky Sharp, Tom Reinhart, and David Carrera. That is all.
Okay, thank you. We like those kind of public comments.
Yes. We were expecting you to
do a contest.
Give us you kind of kept it a secret whether you were...
give us a chance to vote before you leave.
Okay, do we have a motion for item four?
I would so move.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None heard. Motion passes. Takes us to determination and discussion. Item seven, legislative update.
As Marlene is walking up here, we did meet this morning, and all seven bills that are in the report, we did support. Staff recommendations had extensive discussion on SB 332 by Mr. Hertzberg, and we also accepted the electrical engineer recruitment and retention effort report.
All unanimous.
Yes, thank you.
So in the legislative report, I guess I'd like to start and ask if there are any questions on any particular bills.
I'd like to have a discussion on item 332.
Okay.
And for future consideration, that the bills that we're considering taking positions on get reviewed. I mean, if any member wants to have more review of an item, that we not lump them, but specifically, I'm interested in having more discussion about item 332. Or Hertzberg's 332. SB. That one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shall I start with that, and then if there are other questions, or if you'd like a presentation on anything else, I'm happy to do that. SB 332 is very similar to SB 163, which we had an oppose unless amended on several years ago. And this measure is sponsored by the NRDC and one of the co-keepers. I apologize, those names got left off of the support list. The gist of the measure is to take steps to eliminating all ocean and bay discharge. And the way this bill proposes to do it is to do it in a stepwise fashion. So there's an initial reduction to 50% by 2030, and then a subsequent reduction of... Is my time up?
No, your time is not up.
Don't get off that easy.
To 95% by 2040. And there are penalties associated with missing those reduction mandates. And also at the get-go, the bill would also declare the discharge above these limits a waste and unreasonable use. And why are we recommending an oppose unless amended is that this is really the cart before the horse in terms of the ability of agencies to comply with this. The analysis really reflects East Bay Mud Zone situation. There are some statewide issues in there as well. The biggest is that the regulatory framework just isn't there yet. The state is working its way towards getting a complete regulatory framework in place, but right now all of the options are not available to us and others to recycle their water. So for our particular circumstance, looking at our geography, at our geology, we don't have anywhere to put it, frankly. We did these cost estimates based on dry year flows and putting them in our reservoirs, pumping them back uphill to do reservoir augmentation, and made an estimate on what it would take to take the wastewater from those wastewater agencies within our water service area that's not covered by our wastewater to come up with the volume and cost estimate. We're also looking at a pretty significant increase in greenhouse gas emissions. Having said all of that, I should say there's also information on what the rate increase would look like. The cost we're estimating to start is somewhere around $8 billion to do this.
Is that to get to the 50% or the 95%?
We went ahead and went to the 95. Okay. When you start looking at brine, actually, it's to do all of it. For dry weather flows. So wet weather flows, again, we couldn't do it. And even with dry weather flows, we doubt that we've got the capacity for everything, adding in the discharge from the other wastewater agencies. The goal is something that is consistent with what East Bay Mud is doing, which is trying to increase recycled water use. And that is why we didn't want to go a straight oppose on this. And we're leaving the amendment recommendation relatively fluid to give us room to work with the author if there is a receptiveness to other ways to get at getting those barriers out of the way so that agencies can, in fact, do this. And funding is one of the barriers, frankly. These are expensive projects, and there's not been a lot of money available at the state and federal level to help with recycled water projects, though that's not for lack of trying on anybody's part. So, we are recommending the oppose unless amended on this, and we'd like to work with the author and see if we can find a path. I don't expect that to happen in the next month or so, but at least it gives us the opportunity to start those conversations in earnest.
Part of the discussion on that today is with Lisa, Bill, and I, we talked about it. And, for example, if we have excess capacity in a wet period, which we would, and we discharge it, will we then be fined by the Regional Water Board or have to dechlorinate the water to release it because we have too much water going into our wastewater facility as a result of it? And one of the things, we're talking potentially $8 billion here, God knows how many billions it is statewide, and the impact to our ratepayers, and I don't know if it would be on water only, on wastewater only, or water and wastewater ratepayers, quite frankly, because that's two sides of the house and two budgets, is huge. And I think, as Marlene said, let's get the rules put together first. How do we do it? How is it going to be funded? What is acceptable? The goals are admirable. Mm-hmm. It's just not economically feasible. certainly, and we're one of the richer agencies to begin with. And God forbid, you know, some of these small agencies, how are they going to do it?
There are other directors that have comments.
I'm just curious. So these, I mean, they seem fairly formidable, the issues that we're being asked to deal with on this. What do the authors of the legislation say or what to that?
On the issues?
Yeah, especially cost.
Well, the cost, and I'll say what was said in a committee hearing, that basically anything that's financeable, there's a market for and it can be paid for. So
what?
Really kind of looking at private versus public sector in different ways. And I think a lot of this is there's a statement in the bill. And I think looking rather than at the statements, but looking more at the objective and trying to find a path there is our best bet. And there are some real barriers out there. We were talking earlier about some of the institutional barriers in terms of jurisdiction between water and wastewater agencies, some things in statute. But if we can identify those and find a way to work through those, that may give us a path to try to increase recycled water use in a way that is beneficial to ratepayers as well.
And so, Andy, you had a question or a comment?
Yeah, I appreciate the analysis in the report and the concerns that East Bay Mud would have about the bill. But I also think that it's important that we have state policymakers moving recycled water forward. So I do see that this bill is set for hearing in the Judiciary Committee in a couple weeks, and I'm thinking about the importance of East Bay Mud being able to present a position that is progressive around the state, that's supporting the goals of increasing use of recycled water, but also making sure that this bill doesn't impact the district's programs in a way that we're not able to work effectively with. So I think that the issues that are described very well in the report and in your presentation. And I, on the one hand, I'm concerned that just being on record saying oppose with the line of with the other organizations that may want to stop the bill from proceeding would not be the right optics and the right position for the district to be in. If it was possible to clearly state, unless amended, that changes things. It's what
it says opposed unless
it says that on our report, but it's sometimes inconsistent how committees process that. I think I just wanted to understand if our positioning would be expressed in a way where we want the bill to still proceed, we will work with the author, or if it's stop this bill. So that can sometimes make a difference for how our position can proceed. So I wanted to work through that some more.
What amendments are being suggested? I mean, I guess that's question. I'm not clear.
Well, right now what we're proposing is something that's very broad, which is, excuse me, working with the state, having the state identify the real barriers that are out there. There was a recycled water task force back in, 2002 that was tasked with doing that.
I was on it.
I saw your signature. And there was a different optic at that time. There was a different level of public acceptance at that time. Recycled water has moved forward, but the next step needs to happen. So we don't want to lock into a task force. I think that would be a great idea if the author were open to that. But really looking at barriers and setting a timeline for removing them. So it's not a study bill, not saying, hey, let's study this and then, 10 years we'll still be talking about this. But let's look at the real barriers and let's identify a path to get these out of the way so that we can increase the use of recycled water. We intentionally left it broad to give room for the author to get comfortable and perhaps propose something that he'd like to do. The conversations to date have been as long as we don't mess with the mandate, the time frame, and the penalties, that they're fine. So that doesn't suggest a lot of maneuverability, but it's early in session at this point. And, if you think you've got your bill, you're going to stick to your guns until you feel like you don't have your bill. So it's, part of the process. And my hope is that he does open up a little bit and want to pivot in a direction that we could work together to identify some real solutions here.
Frank?
You know, looking at this bill from the onset, by 2022, which is just right around the corner, a plan is supposed to be in effect on how to comply with the mandates of the bill. Just going through the whole idea of environmental review, just going through the whole idea of public outreach and working with the communities that will be affected by this, there's no way to hit that date. There just flat out is no way. I concur that we need to be moving forwards on the idea of getting more recycled water in the system. And I remember, though, that a sister agency of ours used a concept that they called clean water revival, which they then got nailed for because somebody said, oh, it's toilet to tap. Boom. Sledgehammer came down on it. I know San Diego's come a long way, but I think the idea that these mandates with their tight timelines and their extraordinary costs, we still haven't come up with a cheaper way to do treatment of wastewater, to do the recycled water. So from my perspective, I would support the staff position on this because I think you're right. I think there's got to be more consideration and recognizing that some timelines, like this first one I talked about, just doesn't make any sense at all in the real world of what you have to go through in order to get permits to do things.
I have a few questions still. This is not a bill I was focused on until it came before us here, so I have a few questions. One still is the primary purpose of this bill is to reduce the amount of water taken out of rivers or to reduce the amount of water that's treated wastewater that's going into our oceans and bays?
Yes. To both.
I mean, but in equal parts? they think one problem is just as important as the other, or?
It depends on who you talk to. In conversations with one sponsor, it's to reduce the reliance on rivers. In conversations with others, it's to eliminate the discharge. So I think it's a twofer, frankly.
Not always. I mean, they're not exactly connected. I mean, we can reduce our use of water, of raw water, by cheaper methods than recycling it. But people are still going to flush their toilets and things, so you're still going to have some of that.
But under this bill, you're not allowed to have a discharge into a bay or an ocean.
But it does allow water conservation to be counted as a credit towards the amounts. It's not clear to me how prior conservation counts, as a for instance.
I guess the thing is, again, it's an admirable goal that Senator Hertzberg has. It's a matter of how do you get from here to there without bankrupting local agencies and having an impact to ratepayers that right now many of them have a hard time paying their bills anyways that are going to go up radically in order to achieve the goal. And then I think, as Frank mentioned, my God, going through the CEQA, we're going to be digging trenches and pipes all through Berkeley and Oakland to get to the reservoirs from the wastewater treatment plant in order to move it up, and the greenhouse gas usage is going to go up dramatically. When our goal is to reduce greenhouse gas, and in order to treat it and move it, we're going to have to. That's going to be a lot of energy.
Which is my other question, and it does seem significant. I mean, recycling water is a significant energy thing, and in our case, trying to store it would be a significant energy drain and production of greenhouse gases. There's trade-offs. We talked about it this morning in the planning committee, often between two good environmental goals. How do they deal with that, or how do they address that?
No, that has not been addressed. We, frankly, are at the early stage of blazing ahead, and the details are not mattering as much. And one of the things that I would like to be able to do is take the robust analysis that we've done and share it. You know, it took time to get this put together and to be able to say, okay, this isn't just a conceptual conversation now. We've put pen to paper. These are real impacts. So can we back this up and start looking at the barriers and looking at the reality here so that we're balancing rather than this siloed approach that this is the one thing we're going to look at from a water supply reliability or an environmental perspective. It's an integrated system. So how do we look at this in a more integrated way and try to meet all the goals at the same time without having these drastic unintended consequences? That's the conversation I'm hoping to have. What that's going to look like in this bill, I really don't know.
So anybody else before I have my two cents?
Just had a quick question. I did not ask, did the LAO's office look at the unfunded mandate statewide impacts of what this would cost?
It has not gotten to the Appropriations Committee yet, so there has not been a fiscal analysis done on the bill. If anything's been done privately, we haven't seen that.
And it's been to environmental quality, is that where it's heard?
Correct. That was its first hearing, yes.
And it's double referred?
Correct.
Bill, did you have a question or a comment?
No, for me, as written, it's an overreach, and it's something that I personally am not ready to support.
No,
I think
I
the
would.
Staff position is correct as it is written. I think the impact on our ratepayers and customers has to be taken into consideration. And beyond that, what we ascribe to in terms of the highest level of water quality for our people, I have a hard time with this.
Anybody else? Go ahead, Andy.
I would just prefer to not end up on the committee analysis for the Judiciary Committee. I do think we need to communicate these concerns to the author be clear enough as the process continues.
I would counter that. I think oppose unless amended is something we do often, and it's not uncommon for us to do it, and it keeps us in the room to be able to negotiate.
I'm interested in what President Young has to say and what Marlene has to say. I think at the point that it's going to the Appropriations Committee, I would want to be very clear about an oppose unless amended position, but that's my opinion right now.
May I add just a little bit of clarifying information to draw? So overall, the idea of potable reefs, which is what would be required for this, is something that we considered as a part of our recycled water master plan that was recently approved by the board, and is something that is a part of our future at some point down the road. And we'll have a better understanding of that in the coming years because there are four classes of potential potable reuse. There's groundwater reuse, there's surface water augmentation, there's raw water, and there's freshwater augmentation. And regulations have only been developed for two of those four. And it will take. There's a schedule working quickly. The State Board, if they worked at the quickest pace, it would take 5 years to get the raw water augmentation regulations established, and they haven't even set a timeline or started on the freshwater augmentation. So while it's an admirable goal, and our documentation supports moving in that direction, it is not possible, as one of the other directors mentioned, to get this together by 2022 with a plan when the regulations don't even exist. So costs aside, it's not a reasonable bill because it doesn't account for the necessary regulations being developed and the time that will take, and then the subsequent planning and community outreach and so on. So our task will be to try to have we have consensus from the board that we don't want to be adamantly opposed, but rather we're trying to be constructive, and it's to try to work with the author to help him understand what I just expressed. And so we'll be doing that as an agency and in with the Water Reuse California Board also has taken a similar position, seeking to be constructive because that's their mission, but at the same time recognizing that in its current form, this is not, it cannot be done. It's just, it doesn't face the reality test. So I hope that helps you understand that we are in no way going to be opposing and then stopping the conversation, but rather we want to use this as an entree to have a conversation, but we really can't, as staff, recommend support an amend position because that gives too much power. It doesn't allow us to be a part of the conversation. Thank you.
So, I mean, I think that this bill, or, you know, it's difficult to oppose a bill that has goals that I heartily support. You know, when you look down at, you know, LA County just released their big water plan, and they're going to recycle 80% of Hyperion's discharge by, when, 2030, I think?
Something.
That's what they're saying. And that's massive. That's huge. It's a big deal. And I'm sure it inspires the sponsors and the authors to think that it can be done everywhere on a, you know, similar timeline. And, you know, circumstances are different in different parts of the state, costs are different in different parts of the state, and are, you know, I remember when I served on the recycled water barriers, whatever, task force, whatever it was called, back in 2002, that, you know, most of the obstacles that existed then exist today, and very little has actually really, very little has changed in order to create a sea change, no pun intended, for this issue. As others have said, you know, the funding hasn't been addressed. I'm very concerned about the equity implications of this and how it would be passed on to our customers, especially those who are struggling as it is. I'm very concerned about what we do with the brine. Love the idea of taking half as much water from the McCollumy, but I don't know what I think about having to manage San Pablo Briones and Upper San Leandro local runoff to, you know, keep treated wastewater, or, you know, keep our recycled water mix accurate. I just think it would be very challenging in the months when we have the most outflow from our wastewater treatment plant and we'd be recycling the most water, that's the exact same time that we're trying to capture the local runoff from our reservoirs, that we'd be having to pump it up to San Pablo and Briones. On one hand, I think it probably makes the engineers in the room say, yeah, let me have that problem. On the other hand, it's, you know, it's very challenging when you get to the district by district. So I think it is critical that the groups that are supporting this bill understand the nuances and the trade-offs, the increases in greenhouse gases, the increases, the changes in affordability, and try to figure out, you know, can we come up with a bill that supports a greater understanding of how to value and weigh these trade-offs while we're dealing with climate change and changes in our water supply and, you know, balancing all of this. So
maybe we could put in an amendment that says the water will be pumped to the California aqueduct for distribution to Southern California, which is so very dry.
It'll be a lot of energy, Frank, to get it that far.
Sorry.
Do I have a motion?
I will move the staff recommendations that the Legislative Committee did this morning.
Any discussion on any of the other bills?
We had all read them when we were in concurrence, and we jumped right to the 332 bill this morning.
The other bills are more not very controversial.
May I offer a substitute motion that
depends?
we...
It hasn't been seconded.
Bill?
Oh, I didn't hear Bill second. Sorry.
I'm teasing. We table action on 332 and approve the rest of the staff recommendation and see what comes back in 2 weeks.
Well, what is happening in 2 weeks? Anything?
When's the Judiciary Committee here?
Yeah, we've got Judiciary Committee week after next. And what my plan of action is, once we have an adopted position, is to go back and have another conversation with the author, talk with the sponsors, talk with the supporters, and really start getting our message out there as soon as possible.
And is it possible to do that? If I could, please. Is there a path to doing that without taking a position? The board could instruct you to engage the sponsors and the authors on our concerns towards a better understanding of the bill, understanding that it's still likely that we'd need to see amendments before supporting the bill, or we would oppose it until those amendments are considered. I mean, is there something that's a little bit more nuanced?
Let me just kind of go through process here. We generally reach out immediately anyway. I've already been in front of the author twice, and I've been in front of some of the sponsors, and it's brick wall right now. So if we're going to move further, it's going to be more productive if we have a position to do that. And this could be, I'm not guaranteeing this, but this could be a two-year bill, which leaves room for conversation. It's better on a negative position like this if we can catch it in the first house so that we don't get the "where were you?" And even if we've had all the conversations, if it's not documented, it just becomes a little bit more challenging. Our process within this utility is that we've been taking positions on that first board meeting of the month. So this wouldn't put us dead in the water for 2 weeks. It would be for 30 days before we could then activate. So we would be past judiciary. Judiciary's focus is, it's a little quizzical why this bill was referred to that committee, frankly, but we think that it may be on potential water rights implication and how the penalties would work, particularly when the penalty provisions take place before the regulatory framework is in place. So I think we have something to contribute there that's constructive with staff, and it's a lot easier to get a meeting with busy staff when we actually have a position to walk in with.
So I can ask a question real quick.
Director Coleman.
You've explained to Hertzberg, we like the goals, we just have issues with how you're getting there, to him himself?
Yes.
But we haven't shared the analysis.
Right.
Right. Right. But which is the appropriate time. I mean, Frank, you made a substitute motion, and I don't accept it unless you want to.
I'll withdraw it.
Okay. I would like to see our analysis shared, and a request that the to engage some of the supporters that whose concerns should be there are environmental health advocates who will have concerns about this from the brine perspective. And I think about, potable reuse maybe before its time. If this rushes things ahead of the science of, those regulations, and that's part of why those regulations are going to be so challenging, is to demonstrate that, endocrine disruptors and pharmaceuticals and all of the other things that we put into our wastewater are, fully handled prior to half of our water being that we're drinking being recycled. So if I would feel comfortable with an oppose unless amended that broadly broadly and deeply shared our concerns and looked for opportunities to address all of those issues.
I agree.
Any further discussion?
It would be my hope that in sharing our letter with the Judiciary Committee staff that the oppose unless amended position was discussed with them very prominently so that when they compile their analysis, if they're so inclined to provide that level of depth, that either the text of their analysis or at least our indicator in the column does provide that distinction for us.
We'll do our best.
How does that usually work? Because usually they list have support and oppose.
It depends on the committee. Uh-huh. And what Director Katz is suggesting is absolutely can work with some committees where you say, hey, we really want to talk to you. We have this position. This was a tough position for us to take. And we have this unless amended because we really want to work and would appreciate if you could put that in the analysis. Some committees will do that. Other ones won't. And the whole committee deadline and process has changed once again this year. They've gone to electronic on everything. So now it's really important that we sit in front of them and say, okay, look them in the eye and explain what's going on.
And Marlene, I want you to be there. I want you to be there stating our position and our
question. Are you going to testify at the Judiciary Committee?
I will be there. Whether or not I can testify depends on whether or not I can get a seat at the table. But I am persistent, and even when they say, name, rank, and serial number, I can talk until they give me the hook. So I'm happy to do that.
If they give you the hook.
You can still say we oppose it unless amended.
Yeah. And what I can do to make that clear
Water reuse has a similar position, correct?
Yeah.
And if they're able to testify, you can say any spay mud has agree on this and have it brought into the dialogue that way.
Well, and I can say we would also like to find a solution, would love to continue working with the author, and we can go up as tweeners. There's ways to make that happen depending on what's going on in the committee.
I just think it's important for us not to just show up on paper, but to actually show up in person. And
we're a big nose and a bow.
Bow Wally for the day.
Okay. Can we have a vote, please? All those in favor of oppose unless amended with vigorous engagement?
And this is including all the legislative bills. No, we already did them. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we didn't support. So let's do two separate things. Approve the staff's recommendation. Did we have a motion for that? Can we have a motion for the
approval? I'll move the staff recommendation on all bills other than SB 332.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And on 332, we have a motion to oppose unless amended with vigorous engagement. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Okay. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the conversation.
Next up, I lost my agenda. There it is. Sorry. Next up, we have item 8, which is the introduction and first reading of amendments to the regional private sewer lateral ordinance number 359-13.
That's correct. And we have a staff presentation. This is an item for which we've had two different opportunities to engage the board. And Alicia Chakrabarty will provide the presentation.
Thanks, and good afternoon. So I'm going to just provide a quick overview of the proposed amendments on the ordinance changes. So as Alex mentioned, we brought this information to the Planning Committee in February and to the full board in March. This constitutes the first reading and the second reading scheduled for the next board meeting with an effective date of these changes to follow 31 days after. So the proposed amendments are quite extensive. They cover almost every section in the ordinance You have the redline version and a clean version in your packet. I'm just going to focus on three sections that have the most substantive changes. So those are sections 11, 12, and 13. The first one is section 11, the common interest developments. So these are those range of properties that are managed by an HOA, everything from a condo building to a large planned development. What they have in common is that they have some shared pipe. What that means is that shared pipe, the responsibility for it, the maintenance responsibility, can be divided up in various ways. It's up to the parties to decide how they divide it up, and the district, of course, respects the rights of them to divide it up how they see fit and to change it from time to time. But the ordinance does have different requirements based on who's responsible. As a consequence of that, it's critical that we know who's responsible. And so voluntarily, we have got this information from most of the HOAs by asking, but we need it to be actually explicitly in the ordinance to say that they shall provide this information. In the case that they don't, we have a default allocation that we can rely on. We discussed this at the last presentation, and the board had some questions, so I want to address them by providing a little bit more information, more specifics on that default allocation. So the state law basically says that HOAs, properties managed by HOAs, have different maintenance responsibility depending on location. So the HOA is responsible for everything in the common area, and the property owner is responsible for exclusive use common area and separate interest. So this is clearly defined. What they don't define is exactly where one starts and the other stops. That's up to the parties to decide.
Excuse me. Having gone through this issue with my HOA, there's a new law. It was a law, took effect a couple of years ago on HOA's responsibilities, very explicit to common area and exclusive area, and it can only be changed by a vote of the board of the entire HOA to move jurisdiction responsibility from one to the other. So does this take into account that law?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, I didn't mean to downplay that.
All I know is the effort
that goes into changing it.
Dealing with HOAs, some are good, some are horrendous, and I'm dealing with particularly with one that's horrendous, and so in the midst of litigation on it. So I'm pretty familiar with some of these things you're talking about.
Okay.
We need to make sure that we're not caught in the middle of it, this issue that's going forward.
Yes, I think. Appreciate that, and sorry you're going through that.
Whatever. Well, they'll lose, I'll prevail.
And really, I would say this is written with an eye to exactly that, keeping the district in line with existing state law so that it is defensible. Again, this would only be what we would rely on if we're not given the information that we need, and then it simply provides a tool to get that information that we need to implement. The next is section 12, so this is for the large projects, parcels with over 1,000 feet of lateral. Here we're trying to balance the need to address these large properties that have a lot of pipe with the recognition that these are large amounts of pipe and need more time to implement. As a result, the existing ordinance gives interim deadlines to get towards compliance, ultimately compliance. The proposed changes will add clarification on those interim deliverables, these work plans. It will also add defined deadlines, actual dates for completing the rehabilitation, as well as requirements for newly formed parcels that fit into this category. The final section I'm going to talk about is on enforcement. So the existing ordinance has broad language. We're adding a number of details and clarifications to both preserve our ability to enforce while also providing flexibility and tools to get towards compliance. So one of the things we've envisioned is compliance agreements, which will allow us to take properties out of enforcement and move them into an agreement that allows us to recognize the unique circumstances and ultimately get compliance and fix pipes, which is what our priority is. So the next steps are a second reading at the next board meeting with effective date of May 24th, 2019. We are ramping up our continued outreach. So that involves right now reaching out to HOAs, the larger plan developments in particular, for meetings. The over 1,000s will be sending emails, making calls, and holding meetings, coming to their meetings to provide information so that no one is caught off guard and they understand what the requirements are well ahead of any deadlines.
So if HOA is not in compliance, and there's because in the thing I talked about fines, does the fine go to the HOA or to the HOA board members?
Because I defer to John, I think.
Have our attorney answer this question.
So, Director Coleman, are you asking about the civil penalties?
Yes.
So that is a remedy that would be available to the district if we, after many efforts to gain compliance through other means, decide that litigation is the best option to gain compliance. And in that case, the amended ordinance would ensure that we have the ability to seek a variety of remedies available under the law. One of those would be civil penalties. So we could seek that. The amount of that would be set by the court based on a series of factors that they're supposed to consider. Right. And the proceeds of any penalties that were ordered by the court would be split between the district and the county in which the HOA is located. So it would be the HOA or whichever other defendant violated our ordinance is found responsible and ordered to pay a penalty. They would pay the penalty.
So be very direct. The penalties, we win in a court case on the civil and the penalties assessed. Does it go against the HOA members or the board members of the HOA?
I'm not sure how that would work. I believe
they have a fiduciary responsibility to act in the best interest of an HOA. Yeah. And if they don't, then everybody is in the HOA is impacted as a result of that, and they should all have insurance in their capacity.
Isn't an HOA, John, a corporate entity? And as such, even though the directors guide it, it's still the HOA that gets sued?
Well, that's part of that's an issue that personally I am having to deal with, where the HOA board did not take the proper action, and so the HOA may ultimately be responsible when it should be the board members who did not fulfill their fiduciary responsibilities.
Can you come back with on the second reading with an answer to Director Coleman's
question?
Sure. I can just say that we've intentionally drafted the ordinance to give us maximum flexibility in terms of who we are able to enforce against, okay. So that the parties most responsible can be enforced against.
Thank you.
So I would just say right now the way that the amendments are written, they anticipate that the penalties, again, as John pointed out, they would only be imposed by a court, not by us, after we've tried everything we possibly can. But the way it's set up is to be imposed against the Homeowners Association, because we were thinking that's where the funds are located, if need be. If you go against the directors, then you're going against individuals, and we don't get involved in the discussion whether a board member or board director of an HOA has breached his or her fiduciary duties. We want to stay out of that.
Okay, I understand that
argument. So that's why we're going against basically the corporation or the entity itself, as opposed to going after individual directors. Thank you.
Okay. You have more, right? A little bit. No, you're done. Okay.
We'll be back in 2 weeks for a second reading and action.
So there's no action today. This is just a first reading.
It just opens up the process.
Thank you. Next up, item 9.
Right, so this,
I believe that you have a script
to read, but this is the annual salary increase as was negotiated.
So we'll be looking for a motion to regarding items 9A and 9B, pursuant to section 54953 sub 3 of the government code. The board of directors provides this oral report prior to taking action on the salary, salary schedule, and compensation paid in the form of fringe benefits paid to the members of the senior management team listed below, including the general manager and the general counsel. In accordance with the employment agreements with the general manager and the general counsel, the board may authorize the same general salary increases and benefits to the general manager and general counsel as that granted to district employees at the department director level. As such, it is recommended that the general manager and the general counsel each receive a 3.8% increase to their current salary as set forth in their respective employment agreements and commensurate with the 3.8% increase being granted to all district employees in this action, effective April 15th, 2019. The 3.8% increase consists of a cost of living increase of 3.3% based on the Consumer Price Index and an additional 0.5% enhancement. Additionally, it is recommended that the following members of the senior management team also be granted a 3.8% increase in their current annual salary, commensurate with the increase being granted to all district employees in this action, effective April 15, 2019. Secretary of the District, Manager of Customer and Community Services, Director of Engineering and Construction, Director of Finance, Manager of Human Resources, Director of Operations and Maintenance, Director of Wastewater, Director of Water and Natural Resources, Special Assistant for Legislative Affairs, Special Assistant for Public Affairs. The current salaries of the aforementioned members of the senior management team are contained in the salary schedule dated April 16th, 2018, on file with the Secretary of the District. So, do I have
I move a motion? Items 9A and 9B.
Second.
Any discussion?
I am.
You have discussion?
No, I said it was second.
Oh, yeah, no, I heard the second. I was asking if there was any discussion. Nope. Okay. All those in favor of approving 9A and 9B, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain? All approved. Okay. I think we're at the general manager's report, item 10. What? Oh, it needs to be a roll call. Okay, you did. That's not in the instructions. Yes.
Director Coleman?
Yes.
Director Katz?
Yes.
Director Lenny?
Aye.
Director McIntosh?
Yes.
Director Mellon?
Yes.
Director Patterson?
Yes.
President Young?
Yes. Okay. Now we are at item 10, General Manager's Report.
So thank you. There's a written report in your materials. And I can work to answer any questions if you have any as it relates to it. Also at your places is the most updated Speakers Bureau, which includes all the events over the coming next couple of months. And my hope was that we'd have, in that regard, an opportunity to touch base with a few board members after the meeting to review materials for upcoming ward briefings. And that's all I have.
Okay. Next, we have reports and director comments. Under item 11, we'll hear committee reports for planning and legislation, human resources. Start with planning. Director McIntosh?
Oh,
or
sorry.
Linney? Sorry, yeah. Director Linney.
Yes, read that, the blue sheet.
Oh, blue sheet. I'm sorry, is this a new?
This is, yes. a new thing that we're adding.
I'm supposed to read the yellow parts, or?
You can read whatever you want, Doug.
No,
we can also talk about how late the committee meeting went, too.
What happened this morning, Doug? That's the point.
We discussed 6 items, and they were all very interesting. Got some great reports from the staff on it.
Very good. Okay.
I'll be more practiced next time.
And Director Coleman,
this
for
is
the
how you do it, Doug.
At our
Human Resources Committee meeting today, we approved all 7 bills that were put forward by on recommendations. We agreed. We had a great deal of discussion on SB 332. We also had a report on the electrical engineer recruitment and retention efforts and accepted the report. That's how you do it.
Rubber stamped everything this stuff.
Okay. Are there any other items for future consideration? If there are, please convey them to me and the general manager.
Just a quick question. Are we going to get David sitting in the audience, and I know it's not, well, it was snowing up there yesterday.
Final report. Next time.
Yeah, at the next board meeting, we have our
the highlight of the next board
water
meeting.
Supply availability deficiency analysis that we'll present.
62%.
Yeah, it's awesome. Skiing this weekend.
I was kayaking, and it was high water. All right. If there are any other items for future consideration, please submit them to myself and the general manager. Frank?
Yeah.
I can do this.
I know you can. Margarita did that to me for the first year.
He's been on the board for 20 how many years?
The knuckle wrapper.
Director Patterson, I think you have something to share under director comments or questions.
Yes, I just wanted to share generally with the board. One of the items is coming later, but since our last meeting, I lost a very important member of my ward, Clem Daniels, and I wanted to make sure that I made comment on him because he not only was a great football player, which most people remember him for, his exceptional ability on the field leading the Oakland Raiders. You see, by my attire today, I'm dressed to commemorate my relationship with him, the silver and black. I think the mark of a great person is one that they are great, but there are few people that you meet that are both great and good. His off-the-field actions, in which he jeopardized his Hall of Fame status in the NFL, were to move a venue, a game, that was to be played similarly to the league championship of what we now celebrate as Super Bowl. He refused to play in a venue where his people could not sit together with the larger ethnic population in the South. They changed the venue of the game at his behest. Otherwise, he would not play. That lost him a lot of money. And, of course, money's a big thing in football. Well, that's just an example of Clem and the way he conducted his life. When he left the game, he achieved great things in the mind of all of us in the civil rights movement, because he challenged the beverage industry to hire people in all aspects of their work. And he founded CalPAC, which was Nevada and California. That was later patterned in all of the major areas of the country where we had black people in the beverage industry. And so it changed the game for the beverage industry. Joe Morgan said at the final rites that he was one of the ones that benefited because after they were compelled to work with this as a civil rights issue, those companies then had to take people in. Joe had the Coors distributorship here in this area. And, of course, Horizon followed that. That gives you an idea of how he touched communities all over the country. He was side by side during the civil rights movement and helping me with sports for young kids when I was in charge of that program for the city. Some of you may remember I said that I ran the game when the Raiders played at Frank Yule Field. I ran the stadium. That's when we really made money off the Raiders. We don't do that now, but of course they're leaving. But I'm adorned because I'm remembering the old days and our friendship. Clem passed on. He died of cancer of the liver. And so it was totally unexpected. And he was seen by the best people in the medical field. That's Stanford. That's UC San Francisco. All of them examined him, but it was too late. Anyway, I lost a great friend, and I wanted to share that with you. I've also reserved, at the conclusion of the meeting, another friend, and we'll go to that later, but I wanted just to let you know why I had on the silver and black.
Okay.
And the bow tie.
And the bow tie.
Other director comments? Please submit your reports to the secretary. And with that, we are ready to adjourn. And would you like to?
Yes, I'm having the final word today of another friend. Some of you have read his accounting in the newspaper or heard it on the news. Father Vernon J. Matthews. Father J. spent 26 years at St. Benedict's Church, which is in the heart of my ward. And I wanted just to say that he was a man who stayed home, much like me. He received prominence in this area. There's 500,000 or more Catholics in this area. Father Jay was known to almost every one of them because he circulated. His last assignment was rector here at the Cathedral of Light. You could say, in a way, Father Jay worked for Christ to the death. That's the kind of person he was. He was there for the ones who were going away, out of life, and for those who are coming in, for the baptisms, for the funerals, for the hospital visits, for the home visits, and for all the programmatic that he ran out of the church. And he was offered positions high up. I remember him as a boy at Skyline High School, and that's where I first met him. And we've been friends all the way on Jericho Road in life.
Okay, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Excuse me.
Adjourn the meeting in his honor.
We're adjourning the meeting in his honor.
We need a gavel for that.
We are adjourned.